everybody. Welcome to Process the Purpose podcast, where we have real conversations with dope people walking in their purpose, but ready to share their journey and process. I am your host, Crystal B, and today's guest is super, super special to me. Today, I am introducing you all to the first Black female police officer that was on Capitol Hill. Her name is Arva Marie Johnson. And I say she's special to me because she's my mother. So I am excited to have her on my show to close out Black History Month. So Arva Marie Johnson, welcome to your daughter's podcast.
Glad to be here.
I am happy to have you on. And thank you for being a guest, quote unquote, even though you're my mother. But thank you for being a guest on my show. You ready?
I am ready.
All right. So I wanted to introduce the world to you and for them to know who you are. Now, I could go on and read your bio, but I don't want to do that for you because I think that you're bigger than just your bio, right? And so when I started this, I said, okay, you know, why do I want my mom to be on my show? What amazingness would come from this show with you on it? When we talk about process the purpose and what that looks like, now you had to go through some things to really become the first Black female police officer on Capitol Hill. Can you tell my audience a little bit about your journey and what made you actually want to do that?
Well, when I was young and moved up to D.C., I've always wanted to be a police officer. So when I was able to apply for a job on Capitol Hill and I found out I would be the first female to be hired on the United States Capitol Police. And that was my journey. I've always loved uniforms and Capitol Police was the place for me.
Yes. Okay. Now you were 24 years old when you began your career on Capitol Hill. How was that? Were you nervous? Were you scared? What did that look like for you?
Oh, at 24, very nervous. Never had to have a gun before, never had to have been in the Capitol. So it was a journey. Had to work on the midnight shift, but it was a journey for me to start out at 24 as a young age.
Wow. Now, you grew up in Rocky Mount, North Carolina, right?
Yes.
So how was it going from a country girl to coming into a big city? What was that like for you?
Well, I was young. It was hard to deal with the big city when I'm used to just the country and just family close by. But once I moved up to D.C., after I got married, and I worked different odd jobs. And like I said, when I found out they was hiring, I said, oh, they gonna hire? And I kept calling every day to see if they would hire me. And they said, okay, we're gonna give her a chance. Let's see what she can do.
So that's perseverance, right? So meaning that you pushed through. So they didn't call you right away. You just kept calling and calling. And eventually you're like, okay, let's give this lady a try. So how was that to push past that, to not being afraid to make a phone call, especially back then?
Back then it was hard, but I knew I wanted to do something better. And that was a purpose for me to want to join the uniform department at the Capitol Hill Police Department.
Now, did you know that you were going to be the first Black, or was it just you knew you would be a woman up there? What was that? How did that go?
I didn't know I would be the first Black female, but I knew I would be the third female to join the Capitol Police because they had no females at all.
Mm. Wow. So what was that like working with a bunch of men? I mean, 24, you was a Black woman coming up from Rocky Mount, North Carolina, to Washington, D.C. to work with a bunch of white men? Were there any Black men working there?
It was a few Black men working there. It was more white than it was Black. Mm-hmm. And they was hesitant to even hire me as a female to work alongside of them. It wasn't easy at the age of 24 and having men that were older and saying, I don't think you're going to be able to survive this. Most mm-hmm. men do this. Women like to be at home pregnant in the kitchen. And I said, not me. I can do it. So I was able to pass through and get everything done. And they accepted me.
So was it hard to work with them, or was it, were they nice to you, I should say, at the beginning, or was it like you had to work your way in to be a part of the cool kids?
I had to work my way into it, to be around them, for them to trust me. They didn't think I was strong enough to hang in there with them. They told jokes, some off-color jokes, some funny. And then when I started throwing back jokes back to them, I said, okay, I think we can handle, you'll be fine with us. And they accepted me.
Mm, that's good. So even with them accepting you, and I know it's the end of Black History Month when this episode will air, and looking back, right? So you were born in February. We know Black history is in February. Did you ever put two and two together? Like, wow, God, okay, I was born in February and Black History Month is in February. What was that? Did you ever have that inkling back then? Or as you got older, what did that look like for you to know that you're a part of history and you were born in a month that is Black History Month?
That was great to realize what was always going down, to be born in February, Black History Month, and knowing that I had set a goal and priorities to help other people survive and become police officers, Black female police officers, really. It wasn't easy for no Black female really to get promoted when I was there. And everything worked out at the end.
Mm-hmm. So I want to ask you another question, right? Because of course, I'm going to say, y'all going to hear me say Ma a lot on this podcast. This is my mother, okay? But of course, you know, this podcast is called Process the Purpose. And at the age of 24, did you know what your purpose was? Or was it just, I wanted this job and I'm a police officer? Did you understand that back then? Or was it like, what did that look like for you? Like, did you understand purpose then or no?
No, I didn't understand purpose at that time. But one thing that I did realize that when they told me that I would be making $10,500 a year and coming from Rocky Mountain, North Carolina as a country girl to make that kind of money back in 74, that was a big deal. And that was my purpose, not just to make the money, but to be accepted and to realize that I'd be around the members of Congress, staffers, presidents, all dignitaries coming through. And it was a great job. So my purpose at the end and in between was that I made it. And thank God that he had that purpose set for me that I didn't even know about.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said you made $10,500.
Yes.
Girl, what? Can you imagine making that today?
No.
Oh, my gosh. But you thought you hit the jackpot in 1974 making $10,500.
Yep. And that was a year.
That was a year.
Yes. And get paid once a month.
Wow. Oh, I don't know if I don't know if I would have survived. But, you know, that was back in the day, because $10,500 may get you through a month and a half now. But a year? Wow. Okay. Ooh, y'all, I'm just stuck on this $10,500. That's I don't know. That's a little bit of money. But back then, that was a lot of money. So for the young people listening to this, appreciate what you make right now, because you could be making $10,500 a year. All right. So, Ma, I want to ask another question. So, of course, you have two beautiful children, myself and my brother. And what was that like, being a mom, a wife, and being a part of history? So trying to, of course, you're with the dignitaries and the congressmen and presidents. What was that like for you to have children, being a working mom, being a spouse, just trying to keep all the things together? What was that like for you?
It wasn't easy, because of my husband, James. He worked at Giant Food Warehouse and he worked the evening shift. And I worked the midnight shift when I first started. So just trying to find somebody to babysit my son until he got off work wasn't easy. So I had to survive that. Then they put me on day shift. So we was able to work that out. And everything worked out good until, for one thing, like I said, they didn't have uniforms for the females of Solway. So I was in the men's uniform all the way. And then in 1983, I might be jumping too fast. I got pregnant, and they did not know how to deal with a pregnant woman on the Capitol Police. Of course, that was my beautiful daughter, Crystal.
That's me.
Brooks. That's her. And I went through a lot of changes, ups and downs, being moved around, telling me that I would have to, like, they didn't have anywhere to put me. I might have to go home through my pregnancy. But then another white female got pregnant. So they said, okay, we can make room for you, where you can watch the video cameras. I said, okay, as long as I'm working, I'll be fine going through that. And then when I discovered that the white female that was pregnant, they put her over in the chief's office, which is headquarters, so she could sit inside and work in the office. And once I asked, can I do that too? They didn't have anybody. They said, we don't have space for you. So what they did, instead of changing it for me, they moved her into the video camera room with me so that I wouldn't be in the office as a Black female. They wanted me not to be in headquarters.
Mm. Wow. How did that make you feel?
It made me feel bad. I was sad because I didn't think I was worthy to go in as a Black female, pregnant first. And then as soon as a white female got pregnant, they put her in detail office, what we call the chief's office. And like I said, instead of putting me in the office with her, they said, no, we'll just put her back because we're not going to let her in the office.
Mm. That's, I would say, I mean, of course, it's unfortunate. Of course, that was the time we were living in. Well, I was in your belly, so I was been living it. But that was the time that you were living in that space. And to know that, you know, they were treating you all different. But even let's just fast forward a little bit, even to today, looking at the world and how it is, how different do you say the world is from back then, so 83 until now? Do you see some of the similarities coming back into the world on how things were, or do you think it's getting better? What are your true thoughts about that?
I think things are getting worse now. Mm. Because nobody's pulling together. It's hard times. If we don't keep democracy in our lives now, I don't know where our grandchildren, our children would be now. It's hard to predict. And we keep praying and keep fighting forward and just help the young children that's going to bring up that we need to protect at this point to vote and to listen and try to do their best, even if it takes time. But if you work hard at it, it'll work out for you.
I love it. You're always so positive. So I am the more feisty one out of our family. I think I can say that.
Yes.
Okay. You agree a little too fast, ma'am. So what I can say about you, mom, is that you always see the good in people, the light in people, right? Like well, it's okay. We can pray about it. Things will be okay. Right.
Yes.
And me, I mean, I've gotten better at that, to see the good in people and how they are. So with you even working on Capitol Hill and just dealing with different things that you dealt with, did you ever, was there ever a situation where somebody treated you horribly, but then eventually you still were still nice to them and you were still giving them grace and they ended up changing? Meaning they're like, dang, she's really nice. Let me not be mean to her. Did that ever happen?
Yes, of course, that happened. If I complained about something and I needed, like I said, I need to go home to my children. They weren't feeling well. And I had one official told me, he said, this job comes before your family. Mm-hmm. And this country girl told him, my family come first. I will always have a job somewhere else. And after that, he respected me and I respected him back.
Oh, so you put your foot down? You said I was a captain?
Yeah.
So they were probably shocked that you even said that. Like, hold on, wait, she going to leave? Okay, let me not.
Yep, that's exactly what happened. Because they always told me, they said, you know, you're the quiet one. You always, can you talk? They asked me to even talk to other females about how to, you know, do things that you're supposed to do and not argue back. I said, it's not the point of arguing back. It's about accepting what you know is right and wrong.
Mm-hmm. Now, I can say that about you, too. Now, you know, yes, you are nice. You are sweet. But then if you get pushed, the other side comes out. The stern one will come out for sure. So I can definitely vouch for that. Now, I want to ask, as far as with you being on Capitol Hill, and I know that was many moons ago at this point, because you are retired. How many years? What? Almost? How long have you been retired?
Almost 18 years.
Wow. Yeah, you're right, because Michaela will be 19. Dang.
Yes.
That's a long time to retire. Okay.
My granddaughter.
So my question, I really want to know, I mean, of course I know, but to my audience who doesn't know, or to get some kind of inside scoop of what you dealt with. So there were different things that happened during your time on Capitol Hill. So whether your coworkers slash friends were murdered, and then with 2001, with September 11, you know, the terrorist attacks. How did you handle those situations? Let's first talk about your two coworkers, right? And they were also your friends. So I will say this. I remember that time because I knew exactly where you were in the building, as far as knowing that if the shooter would have came down one more level, you wouldn't be here today. So I thank God that you are here. But can we talk about that a little bit, what that experience was like, just being at the building at the time, and your friends, your fellow officers were taken away?
Yes, that day, on that particular day, I was working in the Raven subway, and over the radio, I was doing overtime, and it came over the radio that a shooter was in the building and two of our coworkers had been shot. When I found out who they were, it hurt, and they said they started shutting down everything. And to lose them at such a time as that, doing their jobs and working on the doors, and the person that got through the whole building, that was hurtful to us. And the first thing that happened, everything went down. Family, everybody was trying to call in to see if we were okay. And once they got everything under control, we were able to move around some, but that was a sad day for the United States Capitol Police.
Mm-hmm. And then let's talk about just briefly September 11th. I also remember that time because I was, I graduated from high school, and I was attending or getting ready to attend a funeral. And I remember when I was watching news with my friends and I saw the plane hit. This is in New York, of course. And then everything just started happening. Like, things were shutting down. I'm trying to call you. Like, there was no connection. Like, the phones were out. It was scary. What was that like being in the Capitol at that time, just not knowing? Or what was that like?
That was a terrible day to know that. They came on the radio that a plane had hit in New York. And then they started naming. Then a few minutes later, it hit the Pentagon. Yep. And they was shutting down everything, and they was telling people, you know, to exit the building. But we had to stay in there to protect the building itself. That was a scary day. But thank God we were okay.
That's I couldn't even imagine being in that space and being in a building where all that's happening. This is why I'm not a police officer, y'all, because I probably would have ran. Like, I know I'm always saying I'm a thug. I'll be out here. Not like that for real, but I'm running. I don't know. So, you know, again, but you stayed like that's your job. You still did your job. You were still serving as you should have. And I'm not sure I could have done that. So that's why that is not my calling. So I want to get into just some personal things with you, right?
Okay.
I know you've done a lot of interviews and been on the news and all that fun stuff, but I really want my audience to know, who is Arva Johnson, right? I know your story, how you grew up, not just the cookie cutter. Oh, yes. You know, I went from North Carolina. I went to Washington, D.C. I became a police officer. What was your childhood like? And this isn't to down talk anything, but I really want my audience to understand that people can go through a lot of things and still overcome. So would you mind sharing a little bit of your childhood with my audience?
Well, I was born in Rocky Mount, North Carolina in 1950. I had five sisters and two brothers. And it was a tight-knit family. We stayed in a three-bedroom house. But remember now, it was a three-bedroom house with three families in there. My auntie and her son, my cousins and their mom and dad, and then my mom and the rest of us, we stayed in the house together with one bathroom. We went to school, which we walked to school every day. And then we would come back home and eat dinner. And we didn't really have any money. And we had to survive off of food stamps. But one thing about food stamps growing up back in the day, my sister and I, we would have to go to the grocery store to get food. And then when kids from school would come in the grocery store, we would hide so they would see us with food stamps to get food. And it wasn't easy. That's why I knew when I grew up that I wanted something better for myself and my family. And that's why I always tried to better myself and to better my family with my kids. Them always strive for the best. You might start low, but God always see a purpose to push you up to the top and said, this is where I was leading you the whole time.
Mm-hmm. And then go ahead.
And that was when I met my husband, James Johnson, and we moved to D.C. and I cried because I left my mom and my sisters down in North Carolina. But to me, at this point in my life, I think I was really blessed and God had already seen my future.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Of course, you know my story. You know, clearly you're my mother. You know the things that I went through. And I just think it's very important to always share that to the community, just to know that, you know, your upbringing or different things that you have gone through in your childhood. And, you know, and as much as you want to share, that it doesn't stop you from who God has you to become, what your purpose is and what that's going to look like. And I know you dealt with colorism, you know, when you were younger. And then that, of course, transferred over to, you know, your adulthood and all of that. Can you talk about that a little bit? Because there are, you know, we're Black and we come in all shades. But even dealing with family, family colorism, people outside talking about, you know, what was that like for you?
Oh, that was a terrible thing to say, because as growing up, you know, what, like Crystal was just saying, you know, come from different shades. But I was the darkest one in my family. And what I didn't realize that people saying, you know, if you're dark skinned, you don't get too far. But if you're light skinned, and they said light skinned people always think they're better than dark skinned. And I had to tell people, no, they're not. Because in my family growing up in North Carolina, most of my family was really light skinned. And we were so close and loving and caring. It didn't matter about the skin tone until one day one of my family members told me when I got married and moved up to D.C. She said, oh, my God. Being in D.C., you got light. You used to be Black. Mm. And I was saying, I'm still Black. And that bothered me. And then my sister, I think after my mom passed in 95, and we were having a talk about her death and how, you know, you treat each other. So one of my sisters said, she said, but mom always treated me different because I was light. I said, no. She treated me different because I was dark skinned. But see, the way you turn things around, it was that as being dark skinned, thinking I was bad, I always did everything for my mom. I loved her so much. I just wanted her to accept me as a dark skinned child. And then I found out after my mom died, one of my light skinned sisters said, no, she treated me different because I was light skinned. I said, oh my God, through all this, we didn't realize. But she turned hers a little different than what I would have turned mine. So I wanted my mom's attention and love, which she was a great person. And she went through a lot. Mm-hmm. And then that kind of made me kind of accept, because growing up in North Carolina, the men in North Carolina back in the days when I was growing up, they would beat on their wives. Mm-hmm. They would treat them wrong. We didn't drink, mm-hmm. but the men would drink. And then if the wife would drink, they would beat them, you know, beat them and treat them bad, and nobody would say anything. And then they'd be in church singing gospel songs. Mm-hmm. So I knew when I grew up that I didn't want that kind of lifestyle, but I kind of felt in that position when it came to my children. I didn't think I was that, I don't know how to put it, not protecting them enough. Because being a police officer and then having problems at home and you can't protect your children, it was nowhere to turn. I prayed and tried to help them. They couldn't understand. They didn't understand. Well, why don't you leave him? And then I said, well, I knew the person that I married and he was a good person, but the drugs and things on the street, it gets to you. And if you don't want to change for your family, which I had tried to get my husband to change because of the children, but if you don't change for yourself, it's not going to work. They're not going to, you don't want them to change because they're not going to change for you until anybody dealing with drugs, alcohol, anything in their lives, it's not going to work until they want to do it.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. And I appreciate you again for sharing, just being open with that. Of course, you know, when you talk about your childhood, and that's the thing, in families, we don't talk about that. So you and your sister didn't even know you, well, you felt one way and she felt one way. And then after grandma passed, it's like, oh, well, she treated you different. Well, she treated me different. So if you all would have had a conversation, you would have known that y'all had similarities as far as how you felt you were treated, right? Because of your skin, quote unquote, your skin tone, right? Yes. And then let's fast forward. So you end up having two children, one light skin, one dark skin, right?
Yes.
And so for me growing up, there was a lot of, I dealt with the, oh, you think you're cute because you're light skin. Well, I can't control my skin color. Like, what do you mean? I'm walking around. Like, what are we talking about? But the colorism thing, it goes back centuries, ages ago, right? From the beginning of time, I would guess. I mean, I wasn't there back then, but you know, just the fact that the skin tone and it becomes an issue even in families. And so then you have to deal with family issues and you have to deal with outside issues. And then it can make you have low self-esteem. It can do all kinds of things, whether you're light skin or dark skin. And so again, I appreciate you for sharing that part. And then fast forward again, when you mentioned, you know, all the things you had to deal with my dad, which is, of course, your husband, you know, being the strong one. OK, you dealt with colorism. Then you have this heavy weight now of being the first Black female police officer on Capitol Hill. You have children. We're struggling, even though the world didn't see it, because, you know, we put on a good face. We had good faces. OK, nobody fully knew unless they knew what was going on. But for you, you know, I'm sure, and we had this conversation, I'm sure it was a struggle. It was a struggle to balance. Yeah, to balance everything, because you had a lot of weight on your shoulders. And again, I just appreciate you for sharing that. And I love the conversation that we're having, because I think this is, again, it's just very important when we talk about process, the purpose. And I'm going to get back to the purpose of all of this, right? But the purpose of our conversations, the purpose of the podcast is again, to remind my audience and people who will be listening that no matter what you go through, if you stay the course, if you continue to pray, and, you know, of course, do the work. It's not just, you have to do, it's prayer and work. Okay. It goes together. Yes. But knowing that there is so much more on the other side. So that process is not going to be pretty all the time, but that process is what's going to get you to your purpose. So what if you didn't go through what you went through as a child? And I'm not saying everybody should struggle. Definitely not saying that, but it happens, right? But it sometimes it can build character. We may not understand why we're going through, but what I have seen, and I want you to answer this too. What I have seen is that when you go through, you're able to help somebody else. Do you agree with that?
I agree with that. Because even to this day, I still, you know how they say you're not supposed to question God's plans. And I always say, why me? Why am I still here? Mm-hmm. Your purpose for me is to keep going. Because I remember one time I asked Chris, I said, suppose it was me that had passed instead of your dad. She said, oh, I would have jacked him up and said, you get yourself together right away. So then I said, okay, God had his purpose. He wanted me here at this time.
Yeah. I mean, because your voice was still needed. And we are at a time where your voice is pivotal. It's important. You paved the way for so many on Capitol Hill now and just in life. I mean, anybody that my friends, and I'll be 41 this year, and my friends still talk about you from elementary school. They're like, your mom was the best. She was on all the field trips and you know, you made an impact on them. And that was elementary school. So, you know, everyone remembers just your spirit. I mean, you're still here, of course, but just, you know, just how you are and your genuineness. And it's continued just your entire life. And sometimes, you know, I'm hard on you because I'm like, sometimes you're a little too nice to some people. We ain't gonna go there. But sometimes you're a little too nice to people. But I mean, if we're real, I will say that's literally God's love. Like the grace, the mercy, right? Of course, Jesus died on the cross for us. But that grace that we ask to be given to us, you give that to people. And, you know, you I'm not saying you're perfect, but you're close enough.
Yeah, I do have my issues. And like I said, I question God. Why, when I look back, as my family, most of them are sick and been in hospital a long time, you know, going through different changes and different stages. They said, wow, you are so lucky. You haven't been in the hospital. You're always moving. Mm-hmm. I said, that's God's grace, but I'm able to help somebody else. So God said, you can move this way, but when I want you to sit, you're going to sit and take care of yourself. But you're always looking out for other people. But I have a purpose and a plan for you. And I won't fail you. I'll be there as long as you trust in me. And that's what I always wanted for my family and for everybody, you know, to be blessed and trust. Even in your darkest time, just look up and say, thank you, Jesus. No matter what you do, I believe and I have faith.
That's good. Mm-hmm. Now, looking at me, thinking about how I was from before, I would say these last couple of years, because, you know, of course, I left my job in December 2021. Yeah. I, you know, had my book in 2022 out here, you know, best-selling author, billboards, all the things. And then to see where God has me right now, this is a real question, y'all. Do you see a difference in how, because my faith, because, you know, I had, you were looking at me like, what? God told you to do what?
Yeah.
And I know you were worried, but looking, let's say the last year, right? How my faith, and I know a lot of that stems from you, even though, you know, you were questioning, like, you sure? You all right? Oh, no. You going, God told you that. But looking at where I am now and how God has moved in my life, how do you think your role being, you know, of course, always going to God, even when you had your darkest times, how that translated over to me and to see where I am now, just a different level that I'm on spiritually when we talk about God? What are your thoughts on that? I want my mama's opinion on this now, y'all.
My opinion, no matter what you do, I'm behind you, because if God didn't put it in front of you, he wouldn't have let it happen. So if God said, do it, and I'm going to follow you, and I'm your number one fan. And I trust God to know that he will never leave you astray, you or your brother. Y'all are my heartbeats. Y'all are the purpose for me, the grandchildren. It's a feeling that when I go to bed, the first thing I wake up in the morning is, what's this song? The first thing I wake up to every morning, I have to, because my granddaughter, when she was small, this is the day that the Lord has made, and we're going to rejoice and be glad in it. That's the first thing. As soon as I step down on that floor, and we will be glad, and we will serve God. Mm-hmm. And no matter what, when you think you're at your darkest hour, and you think you might, don't ever question God, though, even though it's okay. But you got to believe in him. If you believe in him, he will show you the right way, the way he have done this family, the way we pull together and look out for each other. I am just grateful and thankful for my family and friends. I mean, God have so much in store for us if we believe. I start watching the news too. Yes.
Listen, y'all be getting on her by watching the news all the time. Y'all know the news be having you thinking everything is coming down. And God is like, if y'all don't chill out. Now, of course, you know, things are happening in the world, but y'all better plead the blood of Jesus over yourself. And yes. Listen, I told y'all at the beginning of the podcast in general, like when I first started this, that you will hear me talk about God. I don't play about God. That's just what it is. So I pray that for those that are listening who may not know who God is, that he gives you a revelation on who he is, because he will change your life. And to get around people, and I'm not talking about Bible thumpers, I'm talking about people to actually believe, that people actually can testify to what God has done, even in their darkest times, knowing that God has you, and that there is always purpose. There's always purpose in the process, right? So that process, again, it's pruning you. It's getting you to a certain space so you're ready for what God has for you. And I want to be clear again. I'm not saying that you always have to struggle. That's not what I'm saying. God doesn't want us to struggle. There are things that will come up that we're going to have to go through, but God doesn't want us to struggle. But that's when you have to have that conversation to realize, like, what's going on? Why are certain things happening? But that's a whole nother show for a whole nother day, because I can go deep when it comes to that. But I really wanted to let the world hear you, Mom, and yes, to give you your flowers while you are here, and for them to hear your voice, especially to close out Black History Month, and just all that God has done in your life and where you are. And I know that now, you know, you are enjoying retirement.
Yes.
And I'm thankful that, you know, that God saw fit to still have you here, and just, you know, for me to be able to interview you, because again, I was right there with you. You're doing all these interviews and I'm like, okay, where are we going next? But it was placed on me to give you the platform to share your story. And, you know, we didn't have to go super deep, but we went a little deep today. But I think it's meaningful and purposeful to hear that side and to see that side of you, because some things you couldn't share on the news or other interviews that you have done. And I wanted our interview to be authentic and just to show up as you are, and to show the world that, again, no matter what you go through, your faith never wavered. Even when you were in storms and things happened, you were still there and God still had you. And yes. My final question to you would be, and, you know, Pastor Victor, my pastor.
Yes.
The question he had asked, and I said I was going to just add this into every interview that I do, because I think it's so meaningful and purposeful. So my question is, what if you didn't do the thing that God called you to do? So you, of course, yes, you went on to be a police officer, but you paved the way. What do you think life would have been like, or what the world would have missed out on, if you weren't obedient to continue to make the phone calls to end up being the first Black female police officer on Capitol Hill? What do you think the world would have missed out on if you didn't do that?
I think a kind-hearted person, caring, loving, always worried about other people, trying to make sure they always strive for their best, and just trusting God. So they would have missed that good part of me.
Mm-hmm.
And my belief in God, and always trusting and obeying.
Yes, that's important. And I think another piece I think the world would have missed. Yes, somebody else could have came along to be the first Black female police officer, but you, darling, paved the way. You opened the door for so many others, for generations after generation to come in, because you took that leap, because you set the foundation, you set the bar high of taking on a lot of things that maybe they couldn't have handled if it was them. So I would say God saw fit that you were strong enough, and, you know, during that time, to handle what was going to come your way. So when other people came in, they had it a little bit easier. Yes. And as the time went on, it got easier and easier. But you, again, bear the weight of that. So I would say, this is me because I'm biased, I am her daughter, I think that if you didn't do this thing, the world would have missed out on somebody being strong enough to take on that weight, to open the door for them to have it a little bit easier. And we hear the saying that somebody else's breakthrough is tied to your obedience.
Yes.
And you were obedient. even if it didn't, you know, for you, it was like, I was making $10,500, right? But it became bigger than that. So we have to look at that as well. It was just bigger than what you thought. And that's another thing, like God will, the plans that we have for ourselves is nothing compared to what God has for us. Like absolutely nothing.
Amen to that.
Yes. So mom, AKA Officer Arva Marie Johnson, I appreciate you so much for being on my podcast. Do you have any final words for my audience before we leave?
Just keep the faith and walk in your purpose. God will show it to you.
Amen. I appreciate you for being on. I hope you all have enjoyed this conversation with my mother. Again, she is a part of history, so I had to have her on so you all can hear her story and hear her voice. Please be sure to like this episode, share it, download, and follow us. We are Process the Purpose Podcast on Instagram, and you can listen clearly on all of your favorite podcasting platforms. I love you all. Stay amazing. Continue to walk in your purpose and trust the process. I promise you it will all work out in the end. We will see you next time. Thank you, Mom, for being on. I love you.
I love you too. Bye. Love you more.
Love you more. Bye, y'all. See you next time.
Excuse me, as I can't.